everyone. I'm Lindsay Lewis, editor of Building Enclosure. Thanks for listening along with us today. Today, I'm joined by Carolyn Kierna, principal with Page and Turnbull. Carolyn is here today to talk about all things historic preservation. Carolyn, thanks for sitting with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Lindsay. I'm excited to be here.
So I guess we should start off with a pretty basic question. What does a project need to be deemed historical?
That's a good and big first question. I think the high-level answer is that we have a federal registry of historic properties. It's called the National Register of Historic Places. But historic designation and preservation, adaptive reuse, really happens mostly at the local level. So I guess big picture, in order for a building or a site to be determined a historic resource, we need to show that it's important to a local community or to a state or national history through its design or its association with a cultural event or with an important historical figure. So it's really about understanding the local community, what's important to the people who live perhaps in the neighborhood where the property exists, and to understand those who came before us and the importance that those people had in really the development or creation or use of the land that we are now on. So there's some hidden histories that needs to be kind of dug up and understood in order to have a full appreciation for a building or a site and its impact in a particular community. And these are sort of the characteristics that make a building historic.
I would love to be able to observe a historic preservation project because I can only imagine what goes into it. So I guess my question is what needs to be done to ensure these historical buildings remain intact during the preservation?
Well, it's a pretty broad field of work. So, I think of architecture as sort of a single discipline, and preservation is really a collection of different disciplines. So by that, I mean that there are a lot of different skills that are needed to make sure a building is retained and reused and preserved. So, it might start with community advocacy, really identifying a building or a resource that should be preserved or reused. Preservation and land use law is a big part of the equation. Preservation planners who start to plan and figure out how the resources that are in our community can start to impact the character of our streets and our parks and our neighborhood. And then to the technical side, where the architects and engineers step in to address the nuts and bolts, or we call it the bricks and mortar of the project, sort of the technical piece of the project. But one really important piece along the way that we can never forget is that there has to be someone, a group of people who has the vision to make preservation happen, and then the people to have the resources to make it happen. So it's a really, really big collection of skills and collection of people. There are a lot of stakeholders involved, and it's a really fascinating and dynamic process, really, from start to finish.
So are there any current trends happening right now in the world of preservation?
There are, and I think these trends really reflect what's happening in our communities in general. And I think two of arguably the most important areas of focus in preservation and in the built environment right now are equity and resilience. And these are terms that we hear in other parts of our world and in our communities, but the way they apply to preservation, let's start with equity. So equity is really the recognition of voices and communities that have been unheard or unrepresented for too long in our historic buildings, our historic properties, and our sort of urban landscapes. So this means that as preservation architects, we always need to be asking the question of whose history are we preserving and whose stories are we telling? So that's sort of the equity piece of it. The resilience piece is looking at the effects of climate change on our existing historic buildings and making our buildings more resilient in the face of climate change. So an example of this might be a building that's in a wildfire zone. So sort of hardening the exterior of the building, making it more resistant or resilient against fire. In the case of a building on a coast, whether a lake or an ocean, we might look at sea level rise or storm surge or the increasing frequency or intensity of the storms that are affecting our historic resources. So we might need to make them stronger. We might need to lift them up to get them out of the way of sea level rise, or we might need to move them and relocate them altogether. So it's I think from our end, it's really making sure that our preservation policies and guidelines are flexible enough to accommodate these types of changes going forward.
So, what type of resources exist for architects looking for more information on preservation projects?
Good question. There are two areas that I think are really great resources. One, from a more, I guess, popular preservation perspective, would be the National Trust for Historic Preservation. They have great stories, great case studies about preservation advocacy efforts and adaptive reuse projects in neighborhoods really throughout the country. But for people who are looking for more technical advice, the National Park Service is really the place where we go as practitioners for information, for technical advice. They are the ones who really oversee the country's preservation standards for adaptive reuse, and they have, I think, at least 50 technical preservation briefs or bulletins that provide really detailed guidance on everything from the repair of wood windows to the removal of graffiti and to the most effective way to build an addition onto an existing historic structure. So that's often the first place I go for technical information. And there are additional organizations, the association, let's say that again, the Association for Preservation Technology. They have a lot of information about technical approaches to dealing with the bricks and mortar and conservation as well.
Now, earlier you mentioned getting, community groups involved, especially those that are affected by the historical buildings. So, I guess my question is, do you work with specific historic groups on projects like this, and how does that partnership work?
Yeah, I think preservation is all about partnership. There's so many different groups, so many different stakeholders that are involved in any given project. Whether it's a citywide survey of historic properties or an educational program that we might give at the state level that people can dial into and listen to, there are people who live in the communities that we study who are the ones who really know their properties and who know the stories that need to be told or revealed. And these are stories that are more often than not, not already documented, not found in libraries, not found in newspapers or books. So this is, about getting oral histories and making sure that the community feels represented and feels heard. So a great example of this is something called the Sacramento African American Experience Project. So this is a project that includes preparation of a historic context statement, which really dives into the history of the African American community in Sacramento, in California. And it does this through oral histories from elders in Sacramento's Black community to make sure that these stories and this really important part of Sacramento's history and culture isn't lost, but instead can be recognized and honored. So there are project-specific groups that we work with like that. And then there are also statewide preservation advocacy organizations. One in particular is called the California Preservation Foundation. So they have partnered with us on statewide education efforts. There's a project called Home Sweet Home, which is a great name for a project. It's an educational webinar for people who are interested in making repairs and seismic structural strengthening of their historic homes. And so it was a way for kind of local communities, local homeowners to have direct information from professionals about how to repair their historic properties. So really great ways to get different groups and different entities and different stakeholders together.
So, with all the work that goes into these projects, are there any challenges when it comes to historic preservation?
No, I there are always technical challenges, and those we sort of look at as par for the course. You know, we know that there are going to be structural issues to look at and issues related to bricks and mortar and materials deterioration and things of that sort. But I think the biggest challenge in preservation is the challenge of perception. So I think it's overcoming this perception that preservation and adaptive reuse are anti-development. You know, preservation is a very long history in the United States, and in the past, it has been used as a tool to stop or to slow development. But, you know, I think we see us turning the corner and seeing adaptive reuse as an opportunity to pair with and really support development so that the best of the old can support and thrive alongside the best of the new, so that we can really bring these together and make the most of our historic resources. And, you know, that's sort of the idea that our firm was founded on, this idea that cities change and properties change and evolve over time, and that we know that our historic buildings can evolve over time too.
Well, lastly, I want to ask about some projects have you worked on. Have you worked on anything extra exciting?
Well, I do have a few favorite projects. This is kind of a nice way to end the discussion. Two of my all-time favorite projects that I've worked on are the Walt Disney Family Museum in the Presidio in San Francisco, and the Ferry Building also in San Francisco. So these are two iconic historic buildings. One was given a new use as a museum, the Walt Disney Family Museum, and it was an old 1870s barracks building that was converted with a very contemporary addition and new use. And then the Ferry Building was converted from an office building into a public marketplace, and that has become a destination for tourists and locals alike. And it really has become one of the most visible and well-known landmarks in San Francisco. But you know, my favorite projects really tend to be those where preservation can be the catalyst for economic growth and community development. And this often happens in smaller towns, you know, outside of major cities. So the one example that I want to leave you with is it's called the Hotel Tioga. And it was the adaptive reuse of a building on Main Street in downtown Merced, California, a fairly small town that was suffering from economic hardship, really lack of foot traffic, empty storefronts, and not a lot of capital investment in its properties downtown. It also wasn't an area that a lot of people thought about as a residential area. It's not a very urban living sort of place. But renovating this hotel and converting it was a 1928 property, converting it into market rate apartments with ground level retail became a catalyst and a trigger for additional investment in Merced's historic Main Street corridor. So it really brought this part of town to life, and it triggered additional investment that it really had a domino effect in this part of town. You know, and it's important to recognize that there are certain incentives in place, financial incentives to make preservation happen, especially in communities like this. And one of those is it's called the Federal Rehabilitation Tax Credit. And it makes a difference. It can often be one of the arms or legs of financing to make sure that in the end, a preservation project can make economic sense so that it can happen. It's pretty exciting, and it's something that we see as one of the best tools for kind of creating economic development and investment in small towns. So we're excited to see more projects like that. We're doing some pro bono work with the Tenderloin Museum in San Francisco to understand sort of the history and challenges in this part of town. And these are all projects that really recognize what's special and important about the communities that they're in. So we're just always excited to support the people who live and work and gather in these amazing historic properties.
Well, I love that. I'm going to be in San Francisco for AIA in a couple of weeks, so maybe I can see a couple of your favorite buildings while I'm there.
Oh yeah, that's great to hear. Well, it'd be wonderful to meet you face to face, and hopefully you'll have a chance, yeah, to see some of these historic properties and all the energy and excitement that's happening within them.
Yes, I can't wait. Well, thank you again, Carolyn, for your time today.
You're welcome, Lindsay. I hope I gave you a few little things to think about.
Absolutely. If anyone listening has any questions, please feel free to reach out to myself or Carolyn, and we'd love to continue the conversation. Until next time, visit us on buildingenclosureonline.com for all your technical and educational resources.